Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
I think there is in text 35. We don't have this for that. Bhavishmin krishyamanam avidya karma kama bhi shravana smara smarana smaranahani tarishan iti kechana bhavishmin krishyamanam avidya karma kama bhi shravana smaranam mahani Karishan nittikechana avesmin krishamananam avidya karma kamabhi shravana smarana ahani karishan nittikechana. Translation. And yet others say that you appear to rejuvenate the devotional service of hearing, remembering, worshipping, and so on, in order that the conditioned souls suffering from material pangs might take advantage and gain liberation. Please repeat. And yet others say that you appear to rejuvenate the devotional service of hearing and remembering, worshipping and so on, in order that the conditioned souls suffering from material pangs might take advantage and gain liberation. In the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, the Lord asserts that he appears in every millennium just to establish the way of religion. The way of religion is made by the Supreme Lord. No one can manufacture a new path of religion, as is the fashion for certain ambitious persons. The factual way of religion is to accept the Lord as the supreme authority and thus render service unto him in spontaneous love. A living being cannot help but render service because he is constitutionally made for that purpose. The only function of the living entity is to render service to the Lord. The Lord is great and living beings are subordinate to him. Therefore, the duty of the living being is just to serve him only. Unfortunately, the illusioned living beings, out of misunderstanding only, become servants of the senses by material desire. This desire is called avidya, omniscience, and out of such desire, the living being makes different plans for material enjoyment centered around a perverted sex life. He therefore becomes entangled in the chain of birth and death by transmigrating into different bodies on different planets under the direction of the Supreme Lord. Unless, therefore, one is beyond the boundary of this nation, one cannot get free from the threefold miseries of material life. That is the law of nature. The Lord, however, out of his causeless mercy, because he is more merciful to the suffering living beings than they can expect, appears before them and renovates the principles of devotional service comprised of hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, worshipping, praying, cooperating and surrendering unto him. Adoption of all the above mentioned items or any one of them can help a conditioned soul get out of the tangle of nations and thus become liberated from all material sufferings created by the living being illusioned by the material energy. This particular type of mercy is bestowed upon the living beings by the Lord in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Jai Gaur Ki Jai. Continuing Queen Kunti's explanations as to the opinion that why Krishna appears. Legna. Legna. Sensation again. And yet others say that you appear to rejuvenate the devotional service of hearing, remembering, worship, and so on, in order that the conditioned souls suffering from material pangs may take advantage and gain religion and gain liberation. So Kunti is giving the various reasons why what people are giving. Seems to be the last one, and then she's going to glorify those that actually continuously hear chant and talk of Krishna's transcendental name, fame, activities, form, etc. That's in the next one. So all of these are factually right. The way Krishna appears to fulfill all of these desires of different living entities. So none of them are wrong. But the main one is, Krishna says, he comes to protect his devotees or encourage his devotees, because demons, they're going to be killed by time anyway. So everyone is subject to time. So the Lord doesn't have to appear to do these to do these things. He can do it by the arrangement of the material energy, but he can't award devotional service by the arrangement of the material energy. Material energy is negative energy. It just gives it's not positive. It's just like a brick running against a brick wall. That's the material energy. But it's not, it doesn't give you it brings you to the realization that you're conditioned and you're suffering in this place and you don't like it. But what to do about it? The answer is not given from the material energy. The answer is coming from the internal energy. So therefore the Lord personally comes sometimes, otherwise he appears through his devotees, etc., through the revealed scriptures, mainly through his devotees. And this way he comes into the material world and continues his enjoyment unhindered. That's mainly why the Lord actually comes here. Otherwise there's no reason, everyone is going to be killed anyway by time, and everything's going to be taken away from these powerful demons. But just to encourage the devotional service, rejuvenate, the word is here, rejuvenate the devotional service of hearing and chanting, remembering. For the pious conditioned souls. So that's why the Lord comes to give simply out of his love for us. So what was mentioned in here, a living being cannot help but render devotional service because he's constitutionally made for that purpose. So that's actually what we call Sanatana Dharma. Sanatana Dharma means the eternal occupation or eternal constitution. Prabhupada mentions in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, he gives a nice description how the dharma of water is liquid, or the dharma of fire is heat and light. So without heat and light, that fire has no meaning. It's not fire; it's something else. And the liquidity in water, that's the actual dharma of water. But sometimes you find that water is not liquid. Sometimes it's transformed. Sometimes it becomes solid as ice. And sometimes it becomes ethereal as steam. It's the same thing. But that's not permanent. That's an artificial. Then the real nature of water is liquid. But according to if it comes into contact with heat or with cold, then it appears differently. But it can't remain in that position. Eternally, eventually we'll have to come back to the original constitution, which is liquid. So like that with the living being entity, he cannot remain in this position, because it's unnatural. So that's why everything is constantly changing. Anything that you see with life, there is appearance, right? There's growth, some sustenance is there, then there's some production, offspring, then there's dwindling, going back, and then finally disappears again. And everything is going through these six changes. So that is why this place is called Maya, or temporary. It's actually, it's a reality. In one sense, it's a reality. Because the earth, water, fire, these things are actually here, but they're all temporary. And we're eternal, and our constitution is in that eternal atmosphere. And the activity and the bhava is that we are serving the Lord with love. So now we are out of that atmosphere. And so we're not satisfied. Because it doesn't feel right. Sometimes it feels right when we're very happy. No? When something very nice happens, then we feel that everything's nice. No? We forget about the hard times. So that this feeling of that you feel nice then is an indication that that's your actual natural position. Right? Everyone is looking for happiness, for satisfaction. So that's an indication that by nature you're happy. You're supposed to be happy. It's an indication we can understand by logic. But unfortunately here, you can't keep that. It doesn't stay. So therefore it's called Maya. That which is not. We think there's some permanent shelter here, we think there's some permanent happiness, but as soon as we get it, as soon as we achieve something very nice, how long can you hold it for? It goes away again. So that is, but that is called Maya. It's simply this covering of ignorance. When the living entity enters in, Krishna gives him a special covering of avidya, ignorance, that he takes away the remembrance of Krishna, that we forget our position, we forget who we are, we forget who the Lord is. And then we set about to fulfill our desires in the material world, which is an impossible dream. The world is actually considered to be like a dream. Now in your dream, when you wake up in the morning, so that dream you had last night, was it real or was it not? This is the question. Huh? What do we say? Huh? Not real. But when the tiger's coming in the dream, is it real or not? No. Then why are you crying? Why are you sweating? Why are you shaking? I saw you. You're laying there. You're shaking. And your heart is beating and you're perspiring. And then we say, wake up, wake up, wake up. And what? Oh, thank goodness. It's only a dream. But when you were dreaming, it wasn't a dream. The experience was reality. You experience in the tiger there. Otherwise, why you fear? Why these emotions are coming? No, in that dream it was real because you were part of the dream. You was identifying yourself with it. Then you wake up and think, oh, what a relief! It's all over. But what is this? This is the daydream. You're coming from the night dream, the few seconds dream, into the 12 hour dream. That's all it is. It's a different dream. But because this dream lasts for 12 hours or 24 hours, if we don't sleep, then we take this as a reality. And that short dream, that short experience, we take it as unreal. Because this is our most conditioned state. It's a long period of time. We're experiencing the same mood for 24 hours. But when this avidya is gone, when one is rid of this ignorance, this identification of identifying yourself as part of this waking, this daydream, then one actually realizes this is also just like a dream. That's all it is, just a dream. Because in your previous birth, you had mother, father, for sure. You may have had children. But anyway, whatever situation in a dream, you was probably very much attached to your... You're probably all human beings in our last life, otherwise we wouldn't be here now. as we had some extraordinary mercy. So we probably had very nice relationships, and also some reverses, obviously, like now. And we loved our parents and our children and our husbands and wives so much. Right? And because of that love, because of that attachment, we also have to feel some suffering when there was separation. That's life. Some happiness, some enjoyment, that's life. And we gave so much importance to following Dharma or whatever our values were. We gave that so much importance. And we based our whole life on that. Right? How to find a nice situation for myself, first of all. Then to extend that to my immediate family, then my friends, relations. Then the, like this, neighborhood extends out like that. But now, what was the value of all that? Looking back, what is the value? Huh? We don't. Those people aren't even a memory anymore. Those people that we loved so much, that we cared for so much, that we cried for. Where are they now? They're not even a memory. Not even a memory. Because at the time of death, that means your karma's finished. Your enjoyment and suffering in this particular body. When that's finished, that's your karma for this lifetime. So when that's finished, then also the remembrance of that is taken away. So you can get ready for your next birth and start all over again. Because if you remembered your last birth, you'd be very, very serious about Krishna consciousness. If you could remember all the hundreds of births, you'd say, well, you know, what was the use of that? So we have to hear from the authority because we don't remember. And we accept it on faith that this is a fact because we have no experience. Some people do. Some people can remember past lives by some freak, or by some yogic city, the tree called again, they can remember. Or the Jyotishi, he can tell you what you were. If you go to our Bhrigu man, he may tell you what you were in your last life, and what you're going to be in the future, what your future holds. So there. But as far as practical experience, we don't know. We only know this lifetime, generally. But we accept on faith these things, and there's a lot of evidence to support that. There was a previous birth. What was the result now of all those? You know, we had so many values, very strong opinions in our previous birth, that this is the right way, this is right for me. The same way now, we have the same set of same opinions and same values. And we're not much ready to listen to anyone else. Why should I listen to someone else? Everyone's got their own opinion. As Mahatma Gandhi said, there's as many religions as there are people. Because everyone's got a slightly different outlook. It's a fact. So why should I accept anyone else? Why shouldn't I just follow my own mind? But in any case, what is the value? What was the real value? We took birth again. That was the result. We took another birth. That means we were still identifying. We didn't reach the perfection in that life. We didn't attain the goal of life. We may have attained the first three, but we didn't attain the fourth perfection of life, liberation. We may have been religious and got artha, karma, but we didn't attain the purpose of life, the human form of life. Otherwise we wouldn't take birth again. So by taking birth again, we can understand that we're still identifying that there's some shelter, there's some happiness, there's some sanctuary in the material world. That's not been cut yet. And if we don't do it this lifetime, we're going to have to do it another lifetime. Because eventually you have to come back to your original position. So why not do it in one lifetime if there's an opportunity? It's rare that someone even understands what life is about. It's very rare. Even more rare that someone actually has a determination to take the process to actually execute that. And it's even more rare that someone actually achieves that law. Against all odds. Against all odds. Everything is against you. Nobody will be encouraging you in the world. They'll all be saying, no, take it easy, relax, enjoy life. Everything is against you in Kali Yuga, in the material world. Difficult, very difficult. Right? You see, even though we've come so far, We may have even left our homes and our jobs and our way of life, our only way of life. Come so far, you shave your head, you put on saffron robes, and still so many problems. So everyone's suffering. The Brahmacharya is suffering. The Grihastha is suffering. The Vanaprastha is suffering. And the Sannyasi is suffering. With the six senses, including the mind. The Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, every living entity is suffering with the six senses and the mind. It means it's a suffering position. If you've got a body with the senses grouped around yourself, then you're suffering. Because you're being dictated to by these senses. You're being told what to do by these senses, or being led by the senses. Very difficult to overcome. Very powerful energy. This is Krishna's energy. And this is a test that Krishna is giving. How much you really want to go back. How much you really... Are you willing to give up this for me? Krishna says. Say, yes, I'll do it. Then Maya presents something more wonderful. Are you willing to give up this for me? What do you want? So he's there all the time. Krishna's there in Maya. He says, what do you want? So he's given that choice. But there's a test also. So that's how we should see everything, is it? A test from the Lord. But it's only by hearing we're going to understand these things. It's by hearing you have to have this some bandhagyan, at least. Of course, Piyojana we know immediately. Some bandhagyan, actually, it's you're the eternal servant of Krishna. I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. That's some bandhagyan. So now you understand what you are. Hum Brahmasmi. I'm a spiritual living entity, eternal servant of Krishna. That's actually some bandhagyan, in a nutshell. And the prayojana is that I should be back in the spiritual world serving the Lord with great love and affection, like everyone else is doing. So in the interim, it's abhidaya. It's a process to get you from that your correct understanding to the goal. That's abhidaya. So that's what mainly ISKCON is doing. It's giving the process of how to get back, the activity to perform, the mentality to do it in. So that's what it is mainly. We're stressing this abhidaya because we're in the middle. We're in the middle. So that, but has to be proper understanding. Sambandha gyan has to be there. Otherwise, you won't know how to make the right decisions at the proper times. So that it must be there. That's why you've got, for instance, 64 offences to be avoided while you're worshipping the deity. 10 offences to avoid while you're chanting the Lord's name. So if you don't know this, you can go on carry on and committing offences you don't know. So then your progress is going to be very slow. The better you know them. That we discussed in the other day about the 64 offences you should not sneeze in front of the deity. Right? So that's there, but it doesn't say why. This is an apparat. So, but there's a reason why. But the acharyas are not put in, because in the line of bhakti, we're meant to be doing. Our first principle is accept what's favourable for Krishna and reject what's unfavourable. Anyway, we know it's not very nice if someone sneezes in front of us. We don't like it. So why would Krishna like it? But it doesn't say if you sneeze in front of the deity, you're going to take 12 births in the sea of mucus. It doesn't say that. But it says that in a prana somewhere else. But for the bhakti sasas, no, Krishna doesn't like it, don't do it. So they're both there. So religion is religious. The religions are like that. They're saying you should do this and you shouldn't do that. And if you do this, there'll be so much reward. You can go to Swarga, you'll be so happy. That's what you want. And if you don't do it, then you'll suffer so much. So that fear is there of not doing it. And the impetus for doing it is the happiness you're going to get from it. But even if you become lazy and you say, I'm not going to do it, then there's also that fear to stop you becoming lazy. If I don't do it, maybe right. Maybe I will have to go and suffer in creamy bojo for so many lifetimes. So it's that fear that is actually keeping you religious. But in any case, until we actually understand, we have realization of our constitutional position, then we're going to suffer. It's going to be difficult. Right? We've all got our own problems. Here, right now, we've all got our own problems. Why is that? We're trying to surrender to Krishna. We've accepted we've come in the right line. Still we're having problems. So that'll go on. The material world is designed to give problems. You can't become free from that. But it's only a mental concoction, actually, the problems. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the soul cannot be cut, cannot be dried, cannot be harmed in any way. So who is suffering? Who is suffering? Huh? Body is dead matter. How can dead matter suffer? You don't, but that's the illusion, because you think you're part of it. Huh? No, who's suffering? This is the question. How is his soul doesn't suffer? Huh? Suffering is illusion. Suffering is illusion. Maya. But you're experiencing suffering. The experience is a reality. The suffering's not a reality. Just like the tiger in the dream and your condition in the dream is not a reality. But in a dream you think it's a reality. Therefore you're suffering. There's no tiger. You're suffering. There's no reason to suffer from a transcendental view of someone who's awake. There's no reason for your suffering. But for you there's every reason, because the tiger is real and you're there and the situation is real, because you're in that situation, you're in that consciousness. When you wake up, you're out of that consciousness and you realize it was only a dream. So now you're in the daydream, the long dream. It's the same thing. So until, when we reach that transcendental position, when you reach that Brahma Buddha platform, then you realize, it's also a dream. Because then you're identifying yourself as the soul, as a spirit, as the Atma, not as a body, as Brahma Buddha. Therefore, Krishna says that once you reach this stage, you'll know no other higher happiness. There's nothing to compare with that in the material world, because that place is problem free. Material problem for it. But we take this life as all in all. That is the illusion. That is Maya. We're stressing so much importance on this. So we have to know what is actually going on. So an activity done in knowledge yields a greater result. Just by chanting Hare Krishna, you'll go back to Godhead anyway, one lifetime or another. But if you do it, if you have proper knowledge, proper understanding, then you'll probably do it quicker. And it means actually you're more sincere about the process. Otherwise, why are you inquiring? Do you chant Hare Krishna, go back to God? Chant Hare Krishna, be happy. That's our motto, right? So you do that, chant Hare Krishna, be happy. But you'll probably reach the goal quicker if you understand the process properly and what is going on. Because otherwise, if you don't know what's happening, you'll be doing things which are not conducive for Krishna consciousness and making the progress slow. So that's why we have this. Bhagavatam is not talking, it's only one canto, 10th canto. So the other 9 cantos, they're all different. Most of the stories in Bhagavatam are problems. Most of these narrations, they're someone who has a problem. And how they resolve that problem. When the Lord came, or they go to the Lord to solve the problem eventually, or Narada comes, or one of the other saints come and explains to them, brings them out of their illusion. But it's all problematic. How do you get out of this thing? Because that's the most important thing. That therefore, Sri Prabhupada said, by a careful study of the first 9 cantos, you're sure to become self-realized. And then you can understand the 10th canto. Then you can understand the mood of Vrindavan, what's going on there. Now we read about it, it's very nice to hear this Krishna Leela and how he dealt with this, the love in exchange. But this is only a shadow of what is actually happening. So when you're on the Brahma Buddha platform, then you'll get so much more, it'll mean so much more to you. Because you'll actually experience the atmosphere, which you can't now. Now it's just imagination. What atmosphere is like there. That everything is, every word is a song, every step is a dance. Everything is there to serve Krishna. There's colors you've never seen, sounds you've never heard. Every atmosphere is wonderful. Just imagine, it's just, you can only imagine what, you know, paradise may be like. But that's all. That's as far as you can go, imagination. But it's much more than imagination. The experience is much more than you can ever imagine. So, but we can only stretch our imagination as far as we can stretch it. By hearing about, you know, the activities and the atmosphere of that place. And this gives us an impetus, because this actually wakes us up. This is actually what we're looking for. This is what we actually want. This is what the soul is screaming out for, looking for in this material world in so many different ways and so many different bodies. They're looking for this is what they're actually looking for. They're looking for shelter. Because they're suffering. You're carrying this huge body around like a mountain. Compared with our size, this body is like a huge mountain, a gigantic mountain. We've got to throw this here and there, and it's always demand, making so many demands. Every few hours there's demand. And you have to listen to those demands. You have to cater for the body's demands. So this is called conditioned. But we don't like that, actually. So if you're intelligent, then you understand, yeah, I am conditioned. There's so many things here I don't want to do. I can't do what I want. There's so many restrictions. So this is called conditioned state. This is intelligence, when you come to that. Then you'll ask, well, what is the purpose of life? Because before we've just been trying to enjoy these things, or control them, to stop the problems and try to enjoy more. So now when you understand, it's not a satisfactory solution. Then we become actual. It says now the human life starts. When you ask them, what is the purpose of life? That is a real purpose. That is a real benefit of human life. A real benefit that you can do that. Only in the human form of life you can do that. But that's just the beginning. That's just the beginning of the alphabet. Now we've got a long way to go right through there. So it depends on our faithfulness, how much we accept the words of the Krishna, the words of the Acharyas, how much we accept it and just surrender it, completely accept that within your heart. That's a process. But because we're so stubborn, we're so conditioned, we always want to try our own way, and we have doubts. Maybe it's easier that way. Maybe it's not like that, exactly like that. You know, it may have been like that 5,000 years ago, but it's just Kali Yuga, it may be different. And you all these kind of arguments, and using your own logic and intelligence, you think you've got a better way, because we do have a big opinion, a high opinion of ourselves, and we have experience that we get cheated in the material world, and we think, you know, maybe we get cheated again. We don't like to be let down. So that it's not easy just to, you know, to give your heart to someone or something. It's not an easy thing. We actually didn't come to do that in the material world. We come so everyone else would surrender to us. We didn't come to surrender to anyone else, because we have the mood of being the Lord and the enjoyer. We'd like everyone to do it to us, to give us their hearts and their loves and their lives to surrender to us. We'd like that. Then we'd be happy. That's what we want. But the problem is everyone wants that, so how is it possible? And no one can have it, because someone's already got that space. That's Krishna. So this is illusion, Maya. So it's difficult to do something, a complete 360 degrees reason why we came here. We've got to do something completely opposite. See how difficult thing it is? It's complete opposite of what we came for. We came here to be the master, and now we're trying to be the servant. Recognize we're the servant and trying to act in that way. And we've been conditioned whole life, a whole education, everything has been conditioning you to be the master. How to be successful. How to make it. Everything. Your parents, your school, education, all these things. And now you've got to recognize that you're not. You can't do it. It's unnatural. You can't do that. Someone's already got that. And what is your position? Servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of that person. So many times you move. That's not easy to swallow. So this is the false ego is a terrible thing. A terrible thing to conquer. But simply by these processes, as Kundi says, simply by hearing about the name, fame, pastimes of the Lord, then these things become subdued. This false ego becomes subdued. And then you've got all the other things apart from that. You've got the actual, just like we're saying now, we're not talking about Krishna's pastimes. We're talking about our conditional state. How we're in here, because you've got to know, you have to understand your disease. If you don't appreciate that you have a disease, why don't you take any medicine? You know, I'm okay. If you've got a disease, I'm okay. If you don't know you've got a disease, why you don't take medicine? If you know you've got the disease, then you'll take the right medicine. Go to the right person, take the right medicine. So that's sambandha gyan. So that's stressed in the beginning. Otherwise, even if we discuss Krishna's pastimes and go to the 10th canto, it's very nice, fantastic. We know about Krishna's astakala lila, what he does all day, it's very wonderful. But then you go outside and you'll carry on doing the same things. It's wonderful, it's going to help, it's going to purify you. But why are the other 9 cantos there? Why did they bother writing these other 9 cantos? Why do you want to know about creation and all this kind of stuff? If that's the goal, why not just concentrate on that? But no, the preparation is also there. The adhikar, the qualification for receiving the prayojana must be there. So this is a preparation. And this is what ISKCON is offering us. The opportunity how to engage our mind, intelligence, activities, wealth, anything, energy, and connect it with the service of the Lord. So ultimately we can learn this practice, we'll be so proficient that 24 hours a day we can always be remembering Krishna in whatever we're doing. This is what the state we want to come to. And then that's actually liberation. Even though there may not be much realization there, that's actually liberation, because now you're not following your own mind, you're following a superior authority, you're surrendering to a higher self, and you're doing what they say. So technically you're actually on the liberated platform then, even though the realization may not be there. But technically you are liberated, because you're not being conducted by the modes of nature anymore, you're being accepted in a higher intelligence. So that this is right what Kunti is saying, that some people are saying that you come here just for this, just to engage the people again by performing these wonderful activities, then someone's going to see them, someone's going to talk about them, and someone's going to hear them, because they are extraordinary activities that the Lord does. They're all attractive, so wonderful. So someone who's seen them is going to talk about them, or someone who's heard them, they're also going to speak about them. So that's the actual life. And then you're going to think about them also. So those three things especially in our 9 processes are very potent. Shravanam, Kirtan, Krishna Smarana, they're very potent. And by doing this constantly, as much as possible, then there's no time for Maya. If you can do that 24 hours a day, then where's Maya? So if there's no more Maya, then there's no more karma. Then there's no more karma, there's no need to take a birth again. And if you develop your affection for the Lord, then you'll attain that place where He is. So that's the idea. We're serving two purposes here. Not just to become liberated, because when you're liberated, you're still not anywhere. You're just out of the material world, that's all. But by studying Bhagavatam, hearing about, then we become attracted to Krishna and His pastimes. And so then we'd have direction. When we come to that liberated state, then we can go to different planets in the spiritual world. It's Bhava Bhakti starts from there. From liberation, Bhava Bhakti can actually start. It doesn't start before. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Vinkunti ki jai. Okay. Any comments? Questions? Yeah, you become Jivan Mukta. It means liberated even while you're in this body. It's not that you have to go there to experience it. You can experience it here right now. Brahmasamhita says. But you've got to come to that platform. You won't experience it until you're on the Brahma-Buddha platform. Not for substantial periods of time. But you may experience it for 1-2 moments, or you may experience it in a dream even. Generally Krishna comes, these experiences come in dreams. The dream is, the experience is a reality. As we heard, right? The experience is actually real. So you can experience the spiritual world in a dream. You can experience spiritual atmosphere in a dream. Or even in waking state sometimes. What is it? What when we say we feel ecstasy, what is that? It's you're experiencing yourself, your real nature. So everyone experiences that sometimes, even if it's only for a few moments. Or you can even experience it for longer periods of time. If you're fortunate. So that's to give you faith. That's just make your faith strong that there's something substantial there. It's that there is a spiritual reality. It's not just a faith. It's a reality. So that experience is given to you in small doses. But when you're qualified, when you do reach the Brahma Buddha platform, then it really starts. Because you're not looking for shelter in the material world anymore. The game is up. The illusion is over. So then it can be more constant. Stay bhavatam. Constant. And that's when devotional service really starts, not before then. Now it's like a devotional service in practice at the moment. It only begins, pure devotional service begins at that's the point of liberation, Brahma Buddha. So if you're still having problems with your mind and your neighbours or whatever, then you understand you're not on the Brahma Buddha platform. So you can understand that it's not pure devotional service that we're performing. I'm performing devotional service because I am having problems with my neighbours, or I am having problems with my mind. So I'm using this process to get rid of that, to get rid of my problems. So I get rid of the problems, but I'm not getting Krishna. This is another trick of Maya. But it has to be like that, because no one has attraction for Krishna. So it's only on faith that we'll get rid of problems and we'll get something nicer. So that's why we're doing it. But it's only faith, but it's still for my pleasure. You can't call it pure devotion. We're not going to serve Krishna. What are we going to do? We're going to take something from Krishna or dump something on Krishna. Dump all our problems. So therefore it's not considered pure devotional service. So therefore Krishna says, you'll get what you want, what you deserve, what you desire, and what you deserve. Accordingly he'll reciprocate. If you surrender that much, you're revealing yourself that much. If you surrender 100%, he'll give himself 100%. That is not interfering with that choice. So in his body you can also achieve that. You can see Krishna's leader, you can enter into Krishna's pastimes. You can see that if Paramahansa's pastimes going on, you can go and enter into the pastimes in your spiritual body and then come back. And one day you won't come back. You just stay there. Then that body will just fade away. You'll leave that behind. You won't even know. You won't even experience death. That's what you say. But that's rare. It's rarely achieved, that state of pure devotional service. But possible, the Jivan Mukta, liberated by an endless body.
But you still need to be in the body.
Huh?
Because someone reaches that stage, still in the body, present body.
Mm.
But still the body needs to be fed.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The body goes through the changes, but you're not affected by it. So many shlokas in Bhagavad Gita. Yeah. Body's going to get old, sick and go back to dust. You're going to have to eat it, wash it, clean it. So many things you have to do, but that's you're not. It's just a routine. It's just a question of habit. You're just doing it out of habit. That's all. But your consciousness is somewhere else. I mean, when you get up in the morning, you don't think, I've got to clean my teeth. I've got to hold the toothbrush like this. I've got to put the toothpaste on it and go like this. You don't do that. You just do it without thinking. So in that case, your mind is free to do something. So when you're doing it as a habit, just out of habit, your mind is, and consciousness is free to be fixed on something else. Says the Goswami, they ate only out of habit. Otherwise they forget to eat. But out of habit, they don't eat. But in the spiritual world, it's real. When Krishna sits down with his friends and they get out their tiffins, then they all say what they got. The best, who's got the best ladder today, like this, and see what their mothers made them. And that's real. That's reality. They're eating that for sure. They're enjoying that. That's the reality. This is just a reflection of that place. So there's a little pleasure there when we eat something nice. It's not the real thing. That's a reality. Then that enjoyment is real. When you're eating prasad, then it's different. That's a reality. Because that's permanent. That'll stay with you. The other nice food you eat, what will happen? It just becomes stale. You throw it away. So that'll cause you problems eating, because it'll cause you to take another breath. But the prasadam will deliver you. So that, and you're enjoying being delivered. So it's actually a joyful process. Whereas ordinary food will just sustain you so you can get through to the end, so you can reach death, that's all. So you can walk to death instead of crawling. That's what the other food will do, to make you feel strong. And then what's the use? If you're born, you're going to death. Just like you're walking to the edge of the cliff. Just like the lemmings. Huh? The lemmings are all the rats. They come from what certain time of the year, some phenomena in nature. Then they all come rushing out of their holes and their homes, and they all rush towards one direction. But unfortunately, the coast is nearby, the sea is nearby, and they all just rush off and fall in the water and die by hundreds and thousands. Nobody knows, it's a phenomena. So that's what's going on. Arjuna said that when Krishna showed him the Visharupa. What's happening? What is this? I see all these warriors just rushing towards your mouth, and you're snapping their heads between your teeth, and they're being burned up by the fire. What is this? What's going on? So this is time, my form of time. Everyone is helplessly rushing towards, drawn towards this. They can't. There's nothing you can do about it. So as soon as you're born, you're just going. The end result is there. So how you get there, what you do in the meantime, no, it doesn't matter. But if it's devotional service, then that's a permanent asset. It's a permanent asset. Everything else will lead you to come back and try it again. Because there's a big reaction for it. But when you perform devotional service, when you take Mahaprasad, that's a reality. There's no reaction for that, no material reaction. That is a science, our karma. She's also daughter of Devaki. She was born after. That's a lady, Devaki. Devaki, yeah. Devaki, yeah? We asked that question a little while ago. Because Vasudeva had about 7 wives or something. He had a lot of wives. But I think we asked that question, it's Devaki. She's born from Devaki. After Krishna's appeared. Younger sister. Okay. So, Bhagavatam, DJ, Shri Bhagavatam.